Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. In a minute, going to play my conversation with Brewers beat reporter Tom Hodricourt, but wanted to make one clarification. Toward the end of this podcast, we start talking about roster rules, particularly the 40-man roster rules as they relate to COVID-19, some of the new procedures that are in place just for 2020. And I wanted to make one clarification. Bear with me because it's a little bit in the weeds, but we talked about the stipulation that if a player is added to the 40-man roster, in the event that a regular player goes on the COVID-19 injured list, we were asking whether or not that player who was added has to be outrighted, kicked off the 40-man and lost to waivers and the typical 40-man process if the player who was diagnosed with COVID-19 gets healthy and is ready to come back. I think it was a little bit of a miscommunication when we were talking, but that player does have to be outrighted as he would be in a normal year. The players who come down with COVID-19, they don't count against the 40-man roster. If they go on the injured list, they don't count against that group of 40 guys. So that means new guys get added, as the Miami Marlins have done to repair half of their roster, and as the St. Louis Cardinals will have to do. They go and get guys to fill those spots, but they're probably going to be a little more hesitant to promote some prospects from within because you can't just kick those guys off the 40-man when all the regular players who came down with COVID-19 get healthy and want to return. You can't just make room by getting rid of that guy without risking losing him to waivers and whatnot. So I just wanted to make that clear as we talk about it. I think that's unclear. Obviously, save this for the back of your mind. It's something we talk about at the end of the podcast, and just bear with us on that one. But with that in mind, let's get to my conversation here with Tom Hodricourt. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Joining you here Tuesday, the Milwaukee Brewers are 3-4 to start the season. They had a prolonged break over the weekend when the St. Louis Cardinals had a bunch of personnel test positive for COVID-19. So the Brewers finally got their home opener off the ground on Monday night in a loss to the White Sox. A few things to discuss, both on the field and off, with Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's on the other line. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel podcast. And Tom, since we last chatted, we haven't had all that much baseball. The Brewers learned Friday morning that they were not going to have their home opener as scheduled against the St. Louis Cardinals. As we record this, the St. Louis Cardinals are still at the Pfister Hotel in downtown Milwaukee in quarantine. Just the latest chapter in a bizarre turn of events that has been the baseball season so far. Tom, just, I guess, take me through the weekend for you, because I know you thought you were going to be at Miller Park all weekend. This is, you've written about this at jsonline.com, just the nature of the beast right now. And to lose these games, it kind of stinks for the Brewers. They're going to have to deal with this just like the Cardinals are, with doubleheaders and reschedulings down the road. But just a very surreal sequence to go from what you thought was your home opener to a whole weekend without baseball.
Yeah, you could, even though they were taking it on a day-to-day basis, you could kind of see the path we were heading down, especially in light of what happened the following weekend with the Florida Marlins. You know, the MLB caught a lot of flack, and probably deservedly so, for allowing the Marlins to play last Sunday in Philadelphia after three players had positive tests come back. Then before you know it, it's evolved into a major outbreak. The Phillies get swept up in it because they were out there playing the Marlins on the same field Sunday, so they quarantined them for safety's sake. Luckily, the Phillies, as we speak, have not had any positive tests, but they missed a week of games. And so I wrote in the a column in the Journal Sentinel this morning, and it's on JS Online, that we can't continue to blow these humongous holes in the schedules of teams and their opponents. I don't know how many major outbreaks they can take But just the two that we've had with Florida, excuse me, with Miami and St. Louis, not only sideline those teams, but all the teams they were scheduled to play. You know, the schedule has 66 games in, excuse me, 60 games in 66 days. So there's not a lot of leeway. The Brewers and Cardinals have two more series, so I guess they could pile up a bunch of doubleheaders during those two series to make up these three games. But how are the Tigers and the Cardinals going to make up the four games that they're postponed this week? That's the only time they were scheduled to play all year, those four interleague games. And I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of mutual off days there. So it already looks like we're going to have some disparity in games played by teams. But how much can there be and still call it a relevant season and worthy of having playoffs? That's what baseball is facing right now. They really have to hope these type of large-scale episodes do not continue.
And it's hard to imagine that since we've had two in the first week of the season. And like you said, I mean, everybody has been so intent on keeping this season ending at the same time. September 27th, I think, is the date. There's been very little movement to lengthen this season into October. I just don't see how that's possible. Like you said, there's four games between the Tigers and Cardinals, all the games the Phillies were supposed to play this Brewers series. And, you know, you look down the line and you could see a situation where the Brewers, let's say just the Brewers as an example, don't make the playoffs by a half game because they couldn't play all their games. And it isn't even on them, it's on the opponent. Not that, you know, anybody's really to blame with this, but you could see a scenario developing where that could happen to a team, the Brewers or otherwise. And that's a very scary thought with only a 60-game schedule. I mean, teams are going to be separated from playoff spots by the narrowest of margins at the end of the year. We're already talking about seven-inning doubleheaders, so they're already abbreviated games in many cases. And this is all assuming that we actually get to the finish line, but I guess I my pessimism, of course, grows every day. The Cardinals, as you said, aren't playing four games this week. They'll hopefully be back on board of the weekend, but they'll have a presumably dramatically different roster, and it just feels like it just I just don't know what we're gonna have at the end of this. It's just a very ugly picture, it feels like.
The Cardinals released names of six of the positives today. You have to have player permission to do so. Without player permission, it remains unnamed players. And one of them was probably the most key player on the team, Yadier Molina. You know,
Right.
a future Hall of Fame catcher. That guy catches almost every game. He's a leader on and off the clubhouse. I'm not sure that you could have a more important player be lost. If you went to the Cardinals management and said, "Who's the one player that can't catch COVID this year?" I think they would immediately say Yadier Molina, you know, just
Right.
because of the position he plays, the importance on their team, and the fact that he hardly ever takes a day off. He I think had gone on the record as saying he wanted to catch all 60 games. Every year he leads the league in games caught, if he doesn't have an injury. And so, you know, and as the Brewers have found out with Luis Urias, you don't know how long your guy is going to go away with COVID. Urias missed the entire 3-week camp, summer camp, and is still trying to play catch up in Appleton. So, you know, you might only miss a week, but you might miss 4 weeks. You know what? The protocol is you must be asymptomatic and have two negative tests at least 24 hours apart. So until you pass that protocol, you're not coming back.
And we've seen some of the peripheral issues. Juan Soto possibly had a false positive, several negative tests thereafter, but the Nationals were without him for several games, one of their best players. Joey Votto simply woke up not feeling well, and he did everything right. He stayed away from the team, was, you know, tested negative a couple times, but they were without him, one of their best players, simply because he woke up on, you know, feeling kind of crummy. Same with Mike Moustakas. And that's the reality. I mean, no one's really complaining about that. It's just the number of variables that teams have to deal with that are from a normal season. It's astonishing. It's almost just luck of the draw who's going to end up in the playoffs this year. There's so much that can go wrong for a team, and they could lose their personnel at any moment.
Yeah, it's a bad time to like just get a cough or like the regular flu.
Right, yeah. Which some players can play through, but not so this year, not at all.
Nope, they're immediately going to quarantine you, and then you're going to have to pass some tests. So, and that is the way it should be, but it's unfortunate. We knew it was going to be a different world. They have just gotten off to a way rockier start than they thought. Craig Counsell was very frank in his assessment of the situation in that column I wrote in the paper this morning and on JS Online. He said, "We're not doing well." He goes, "There's no other way to," but he also said, "We're mirroring the country." He had a, he's a very smart guy, and he had a very good analogy. He said, just like all the states were allowed to do their own thing by the federal government, right or wrong, he said, we gave all these protocols to 30 different operators, 30 teams, and they were told to, do their best with it and please follow the protocols. And so he said, it's a very, he goes, look at how many states aren't doing well. And now he says, now we have some teams that aren't doing well. So anytime, you've got it spread out among these large groups of people, there's going to be issues. And you don't have to do anything wrong. A little bothered by some of the public shaming that's gone on out there. Like, did guys go to casinos or did guys go to clubs or playing golf and all this stuff? Well, unless you can prove that's where they got sick or that they were violating protocols, then I think you need to reserve judgment. This is a serious thing. I do believe MLB now has asked teams to tell their players to remain in their rooms on the road, so no more, junkets up to Whistling Straits and stuff like that. So, now they're just clamping down tighter than ever on the road. But we, you see why. But the thing that we have found out is, if you get a couple of positives on your team, it's going to be very hard for it not to evolve into a larger outbreak.
Yeah, and the St. Louis Cardinals, you could frown upon the behavior, like you said, of going out doing stuff, whether or not you get a COVID outbreak from that. But the blaming of people who get sick is a problem, not just in baseball, but kind of everywhere. That's something that people need to be really careful
It's
of.
like mask shaming. I don't care. Just don't worry about what other people are doing. Doesn't bother. I wear a mask everywhere I go. I'm a COVID fearer, not a COVID denier. But if somebody doesn't want to wear a mask, I'm not going to go up and kick them in the groin. But I will keep my distance from them.
Sure.
It's up to each. And, I think you're going to be like breaking some laws if you continue to do, because it just looks like the mask thing's becoming more and more mandatory across the country. And when you look at the death counts and all that stuff, you can see why. But I do think the public shaming part of it, and Craig Counsell spoke out about that too at the start of summer camp. He said he hoped that there would not be public shaming about it. I think there's been a little bit of shaming on Lorenzo Cain on social media for deciding to opt out.
Right.
Well, these guys were given the opportunity, to do it. He walked away from his salary too. He's not was not considered an at-risk player, so he walked away from his salary. Now, you can say what you want about the timing of him doing it, that maybe he should have done it, just in camp or at the start of camp and not gone into the season. That's a debatable topic, I think, but not the decision itself. And so
Yeah, and right. So even though they didn't play baseball, Lorenzo Cain being the biggest. They've had some changes. I mean, Ryan Braun going on the injured list. We're going to talk about Pat Murphy in a second. That Cain loss, I think, is really big. I actually understand the timing. I feel like, I can understand a player being like, let's just give it a shot. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how the
right.
procedures are put in place. Let's feel it out. And a week goes by, and two teams already have major outbreaks. If you're Lorenzo Cain, you're thinking, well, it's only a matter of time before it
Right. And
happens here.
think about the timing of when he made his decision. They had just come back from their road trip. He probably saw some things that bothered him, He probably saw some loopholes, in the protocols that might be problematic, or he just didn't like. It's okay to not like, basically being in isolation. It's okay to not like that, but that's the only way they're going to get this, have any chance of getting this done. But, he made a $5.5 million decision. He didn't walk away with pay. He walked away without pay. And you can say all you want to, well, he's made plenty of money and he's still got more money to come. My point is, it was not a taken lightly decision, with no consequences for him. So it just shows you how much it bothered him. And I've known Lorraine since, excuse me, I've known Lo Kane since he was a teenager when they drafted him. You know, I've known him since he was a kid, and he's about as good a person as you'll ever come across, and considered a very good teammate and a leader in the clubhouse. So, you cannot like his decision, but it's impossible to not like him as a person if you know him. But it does blow a big hole in the team. You know, they lost, one of their best players, and coinciding with losing Ryan Braun, and then the timing of now facing the White Sox with three left-handed pitchers in 4 days, and you lost two of your best right-handed hitters. So, if you want to just look at it from a baseball standpoint, it's very unfortunate, but you can't do anything about guys being afraid of COVID or having injuries. So just a very unfortunate. I was trying to think, and you mentioned the Pat Murphy thing, their bench coach having a heart attack on Saturday. I was trying to think, in the 35 years I've covered the team, a rougher 4 day period
Without
for a
baseball.
team. And this is, and I covered them in the 90s when almost every 4 day period was rough.
Yes, the
But that
entire
was,
2002 season.
but that was baseball. I'm not talking about having rough results on the field. I'm talking about just having tough circumstances with your team. Pat Murphy could have died Saturday, but, and if he would have had his heart attack after the workout when he went back to his residence, he might have, if he, if he can't get to a phone and make the 911 call. He had, just like these players are benefiting from COVID protection that the average citizen may not have, they also benefit from tremendous medical support. And he rightfully rightly figured out something was going on. He didn't feel right. Then he, told the trainer. That trainer immediately saw what was happening. They started taking care of him, called an ambulance, got there. They mobilized cardiologists at the other end. And, he had a blocked artery that needed a stent. You can die from stuff like that. Usually I've talked to cardiologists about, Murphy's 61. He's the oldest coach on the staff, and we had talked to him about worry being coming back with COVID, because he's a dad the second time around, so he has some young kids, and he's by far, well, not by far, he's the oldest coach on the staff, and so there were some COVID, fears with by the team for him, and he and counsel, who go back, 30 years, the closest of friends, and counts had told him, if you don't want to come back, don't come back. But Murph is he's a real baseball lifer, and he came back. But like I was getting ready to say, I've talked to cardiologists, and they tell you're in the heart attack wheelhouse in your 60s, meaning a lot of times that's the one that gets you. You and I had a colleague, Don Walker, who was at that age, and he had one, and he's the most fit guy. I tried never to stand next to him because he's so trim. You're gonna look fat standing next to Don Walker, and he had a heart attack on a treadmill and died. So, when you're in your 60s, cardiologists have told me that the first heart attack often gets you. That's, they call it the widow maker. That's the one that gets you. And but if you survive it, your chances of lifelong survival are good. Until No one lives. No one lives forever. But you know what I mean. Your chances of good of not dying of another heart attack. Because guess what? You start getting treated for that, looking for it, knowing the symptoms, being under cardiologist care, and so your chances improve of doing okay in that regard. So he's a lucky man, and I think he'll tell you today, I'm a lucky man.
I do want to go back and talk a little more about Lorenzo Cain, but Pat Murphy, I think for the average fan, they probably don't give a lot of thought to him. The bench coach is sort of, kind of out of sight, out of mind for the most part, sort of the top trusted advisor a manager has. And obviously Craig Counsell and Pat Murphy, for those who do know him, there's a very long history between the two of them. And Pat Murphy is absolutely one of the best characters on this team. He's extremely funny, dry sense, just a he's an energy and a presence, man. He's not just a guy who's studying numbers and stuff. I mean, he is really a gregarious, notable presence in that clubhouse. So I do think this is going to be a loss that's felt. Obviously, anytime a teammate or somebody you're with all the time goes down with a heart attack, there's obviously some concern. But this guy is someone that I think is going to be missed a lot more than people may realize.
Yeah, he'll be missed personally and professionally. You know, the guys love him, and so that he's, you know, he's always, before COVID, he always had his arm around somebody's shoulders talking to him off to the side. You know, he's just a very wise and a great baseball sage, and so you learn a lot just by listening to him. And then you know, he knows his baseball. This guy was a fabulously successful college coach at Notre Dame and ASU, and then went into the pro ranks and did some managing in the Padres system. Counsel, as soon as he became manager, his number one goal was to get Pat Murphy on his staff. You know, he played for him at Notre Dame. They, as Counsel said at the time, we've had a 25-year conversation about baseball, and it's now 30 because he's been on the staff 5 more years. So, and he's, no one's more well connected than him. I guarantee you, he's returned 1,000 text messages since Saturday. I had so many people reach out to me, give me Murphy's number. You know, I got it, you know. I mean, this guy is as well connected in amateur and professional baseball as anybody could be. Well, what is it, the six or seven degrees of Kevin Bacon? I think just the 1 degree of Pat Murphy goes throughout almost all of baseball.
Yeah, and similarly with Lorenzo Cain, missing someone, I do think when we talk about leadership in a baseball clubhouse, it does only go so far in a sport predicated on one-on-one individual matchups. It does sometimes, I think, more than other sports, just come down to talent more so than chemistry. But what Lorenzo Cain brings to the table really does go beyond what he does on the field, and especially at a time in a 60-game season where there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of panic. There's just an ease with which he handles everything. And he's not a rah-rah guy, but you can, you know, when I hear that, I usually think, oh, he's a quiet person. And it kind of is, but he also isn't. It's very kind of hard, it's hard to sort of describe the presence that he has, which is very big as a veteran and a leader and a great player. And more than that, on the field, this team gets built with the understanding that there is an elite center fielder defensively back there. You can go get a guy like Brett Anderson, who isn't going to strike out the ballpark, because if there's a fly ball to center field anywhere in the neighborhood, Lorenzo Cain is going to run it down. And it's not like they don't have other solid defensive outfielders, but not having Lorenzo Cain, that's a huge loss for a team that's built around the understanding that he's going to be there. I think the team is going to miss him way more than anyone realizes.
Well, you know, he showed his value last year when he wasn't having a great offensive season, but he finally got his gold glove that had been overdue for so many years. And so, you know, secondary to or equal really to run scoring is run prevention, because it works out either way. You know, it's, hockey does a great job of that plus minus when a guy's on the ice, you know, to show you what his value is totally. So if you are, and it started right on opening day last year when he robbed a home run and two outs in the ninth inning to save the game against the Cardinals. So if you're not going to knock a run in, but you save a run or two, it's a tantamount to the same thing. You know, you're plus whatever. And so he's just, you know, tremendous value. He gets the balls that you don't think he's going to get to. You know, he's got a lot of rope-a-dope in him as both a person and a player. He just kind of lulls you to sleep, and then boom, you know, he gets you like Ali used to get people against the ropes. So, and he, you know, you mentioned that he's not a rah-rah guy, but a good, you know, kind of a quiet leader. Those old E.F. Hutton commercials when the guy would start talking and everybody leaned in, well, that's what people would do with Lorenzo Cain, because something good was going to be said when he had something to say. So we missed just getting to go in the clubhouse and interview him and have his three sons climbing all over him like a set of monkey bars, you know.
It's, yeah.
He was his own personal gymnasium. You would talk to him and his three kids would just be, one would have be wrapped around his neck, one would be climbing up his back, one would be hanging on his legs, and he'd be trying to do his interviews with a smile on his face. It was just kind of fun for everybody. So, yeah, we'll miss him and his kids, but he'll be back next year.
We talked about Luis Urias being in the poor devil category, and I don't think Ryan Braun really fits the criteria of poor devil, but he sure has come down with a number of strange, you know, recurring, consistent injuries over the years. This finger infection that required some medical attention and has now put him on the injured list is sort of the latest episode there. the Brewers again down Lorenzo Cain. They are missing another bat now in the middle of their lineup. And I guess the only way to really think about this is through speculative means, because we don't know. But, you know, we heard those comments Ryan Braun made about thinking of the baseball season in day-to-day terms, you know, being concerned with the COVID-19 threat. I got to think a guy like him is the type of player who could potentially opt out, especially if an injury is going to hold him back for a good chunk of the year. It may not make sense for a guy who now, you know, may want to come back for another year of baseball to just sort of rest and restore and realize that there isn't much he can do right now anyway. I don't know if you get a sense one way or the other about what Ryan Braun might do next, but losing him for an amount of time is certainly yet another blow to a team that had a lot of them for, again, on a weekend where there was no baseball.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be something that keeps him out for a long time. Their thinking was just the minimum 10 days is the finger infection. You know, he tried to write it out, and then it got so bad he actually had to go to an ER, and I think they sliced it open and drained it. And so, you know, you do need your fingers to grip a bat and to grip a baseball. So, but they're hoping it won't be more than just the 10 days. And that's backdated to the last day he played, too. So it's just another week, actually. So, yeah, but, his bat is missed. He was starting to work out a little bit at first base. But now the Craig Counsell told us the Lorenzo Cain changed the outfield dynamic. So their new outfield plan is to leave Yelich in left field. They like him there. But Avi Garcia, who was pretty much the everyday right fielder, he played some center field early in his career, and he runs a lot better than you think he would for such a, you know, kind of a bulky guy. And so they've decided to put him in center and not Ben Gamel, who we assumed would take over in center. They're going to put Garcia there and then just make him the center fielder. And then Craig Counsell told us yesterday that when Ryan Braun comes back, he and Gamel will do some platooning in right field, because you have Gamel batting left and Braun batting right. So Ryan Braun is going to return to the outfield, something we did not think we would see this year.
That is, it's so funny. The team has tried to move him to first base a couple times, and then circumstance just wound up putting him right back in the outfield. But I too was surprised about Avisel Garcia in center field for Monday night's game against the White Sox. Sort of an awkward play that definitely made that decision look a little dubious to start with. But like you said, he can move pretty well for a guy who's perceptibly a little bit bigger, and he's done it before. So I imagine Ben Gamel will get some cracks in center field too as the season goes on. You know, one thing with the COVID-19 protocol, this is something I said out loud, I'm sure a lot of people said out loud over these 4 months where there were basically no sports. Man, do I long to be thinking about something completely superfluous like bullpen usage again and complaining about the manager. And I know people thought that. Well, Monday night rolls around and here we go. Everybody gets their opportunity to fret about bullpen usage. In the example Monday, Corbin Burnes was left in to complete a fourth inning of relief. He wound up serving up a 3-0 pitch to Jose Abreu that led into a game-tying two-run homer. Brewers, of course, go on to lose that game 6-4. Josh Hader was available and seems like a guy who maybe could have been brought in that situation. Hader has been used very sparingly this year. And I think the first question would be, is this going to be the same Josh Hader we've seen in years past, where he is used very, very delicately, only in certain situations? And is he going to be used for multi-inning stints? That's how we've seen it in the past, but it does seem like there's maybe a hesitance, at least early going, Monday's example, and then another game earlier this year where Josh Hader was not brought into the fold. I know you're just laughing and thinking about bullpen complaints at a time like this seem like the smallest of potatoes, but do you get a sense that this is the same usage type we're going to see for Josh Hader that we've seen in past years?
Well, that two-run home run that Corbin Burnes gave up to Abreu was in the seventh inning. They're not going to bring Josh Hader in the seventh inning.
But he has pitched three innings before, you know, against the Reds. And I mean,
the season's just starting. They were just coming off of 4 days off. They got 11 guys in the bullpen.
Sure.
On a 16-man staff. David Phelps was the guy who was up in the bullpen. If there's any second guessing over leaving Corbin Burnes in the face of Abreu, it would be not bringing Phelps in, a right-handed pitcher against a right-handed batter, Jose Abreu.
Sure.
You know, Burnes had pitched great, but There was, and even Craig Counsell said after the game that he second guessed himself a little bit, but he just noticed how well he noted how well Burns had been pitching. But there were some things that raised eyebrows that inning that maybe told you his shelf life was getting short. He walked Luis Robert with one out on four pitches. Then he was in a protracted battle with the next hitter. Can't remember off the top of my head who it was, but it was somebody that battled him for like seven or eight pitches. Then he struck him out. And so, but then he fell behind 3-0 to Abreu. Power hitters like Abreu, they're not taking on 3-0. Just if he looked up down to the third base coach and he got a take sign, he would step out of the box and there would be a discussion because those guys are not going to take 3-0. So, Burns, I don't think he thought Abreu was going to take on 3-0, but he threw him too fat of a pitch. It was up in the zone a little bit, but down the middle of the plate. And he did what good hitters do to pitchers like that. He crushed it out to center field. So that and then that just changed the game. Now instead of a 4-2 lead, it's 4-4. So if you haven't and Abreu and Burns had been in an 11-pitch battle in the fifth inning that Burns finally won by getting a cutter past him.
Right.
But that was an epic battle. So Abreu had seen a lot of pitches from Burns. And that might have helped him as well too. So, but the second guess would be if you should have maybe brought Phelps in to face Abreu, and then you can let Phelps stay in and pitch the eighth, and then you can bring Hader in the
Sure.
ninth.
Or when there were runners at the corners in the eighth and Phelps, uncorks the wild pitch on a 3-0 count that winds up scoring the run. I mean, I feel like we're too deep in the weeds on this, too early in the season, but the
Well,
bullpen.
they had some very bad luck that inning. With a
Right.
runner on first and one or two outs, there's a bloop, an opposite field bloop. What we call them stoinkers. The Brewers had their shift on, and the left-handed batter hits a bloop. I think Larry Garcia hits a bloop to the left side that would, if you're in your normal position, would have been right to the shortstop. But instead, Garcia had to try to race over from behind the bag, and he just missed a diving catch. So I mean, that ball just, nine times out of 10 is an out, but they just happen to be shifted the other way. That let the runner on first go to third. And then on a 3-0 count, Phelps just uncorked a wild pitch. It was a ball four, but also a run scoring wild pitch. So that was a kind of an unfortunate inning too. And then, the Brewers, didn't do anything against the White Sox bullpen. In past seasons, they would have felt really good about the situation they had in the ninth inning when Hira doubled with two outs, bringing Yelich to the plate. That's a situation that's worked out in the Brewers' favor so many times. But this time he grounded out. And, he showed a few signs last night of breaking loose. He had a double and a single and a walk. But he also took a called third strike with the bases loaded, in which he never swung the bat. And then that out at the end, but at least he showed some signs. Christian Yelich is going to be fine. We guys like him, it's not if he's going to come out, it's when he's going to come out. But that's just what they're battling right now. They've got some offensive deficiencies because Kane's gone, Braun's gone, and Yelich is still trying to find himself. So this is not the offense hitting on all cylinders that they had last year. And of course, Moustakas and Grandal are gone. So they just right now don't have the same offense they had last year when scoring runs was not a problem for them.
Yeah, and it does seem like other guys are struggling a little bit in the very small sample we have. Justin Smoke, Eric Sogard, some of the guys that were brought in outside of Avisaíl García. I would say that most of the guys on offense that have been brought in haven't clicked yet. Haven't really been able to contribute much. Keston here has been just okay, but he's had the double last night. He's had a couple home runs, a couple big extra base hits,
Right.
and
And
like,
we're talking seven games and
right.
including six played, then 4 days off, then one played.
Exactly.
I mean, this has been a season of fits and starts. The schedule originally looked incredibly daunting from a games played thing. Their schedule had them playing six games on the road, having a day off, then playing 17 in a row,
Yeah.
even with a 30-man roster, that's a long stretch. Well, the first three got banged, so now instead of 17 in a row, it'll only be 14 in a row, they hope.
Yeah, and that's not that unusual. That feels normal, I guess. But still, it's a challenge to start and stop, like you said, for everybody. One guy who hasn't stopped is Brandon Woodruff. He will be pitching on normal rest as we record this Tuesday night. Looked awesome in Pittsburgh through 6 1/3, I believe, of a one hitter. The Brewers allowing just one hit on that Pittsburgh mound where that famous one hitter in 2008. Don't remember who threw that one, but a very memorable place for Brewers in one hitter history. But Woodruff has looked really good. He didn't get the win on opening day, but pitched very well. And it seems like, we've talked about him taking a step forward. We've talked about what him, being an all-star last year and really kind of achieving this level. He may not have national notoriety, but it feels like we are seeing an absolute force of nature. And like all caveats, two starts can't really say a whole lot about that. But Brandon Woodruff sure has looked the part of an ace pitcher at this point.
Well, you can go back to the way he was throwing last year, particularly before he hurt his oblique.
Absolutely.
He was an all-star pitcher last year. Then he looked great in spring training, looked great in summer camp, and that was looked great his first two times out. So this is a star in the making. It's very exciting for them because he's a homegrown guy, a drafted guy by them, a steal in the 11th round out of Mississippi State. As it appears now, he's the right kind of guy, just a bulldog. He can throw 98 miles an hour, has a tremendous arsenal, just a big horse, a guy that you think you can ride hard for many years. So it's almost a shame that you're only going to get 10 starts out of him this year. You'd like to get the regular 30 to 33 starts out of him, but they're going to feel really good every 5 days when he takes the mound about their chances of winning. When he pitched that final game in Pittsburgh, it was the difference between coming home 3-3 and coming home 2-4. That's a big difference. And they felt so good about it with him on the mound. And sure enough, they were in really good shape with him on the mound.
Just a swinging bunt, second batter of the game that accounts for the only hit, a very weakly struck ball that Woodruff couldn't quite get to. Again, very parallel game to the 2008 one-hitter thrown, of course, by CC Sabathia, the one that could have easily been the second
Maybe
no-hitter.
that, maybe in retrospect, though, that was a good thing because if he has the no-hitter, the pressure's to leave him in.
Right.
And he might not have given up a hit, but he might have had a 130-pitch no-hitter in his second start of the season after a 3-week camp. That probably would not have been a good thing.
Right, and they probably wouldn't go to Devin Williams, for example. I mean, they're freed up to not have to worry about the historical aspect. They can just play their game as they would.
Right.
They weren't winning by a ton, but they were pretty comfortable where they were at, so they could kind of coast home on that one. I had an email, a question from a listener named Brittany, and she had a question about roster construction and some of the confusing elements that she's encountered. And I think it bears asking, given what we've seen with the Cardinals and the Marlins, who've had to fill pretty good. The Cardinals still sort of in process, but filling a lot of spots on the roster with guys who have tested positive for COVID-19. There is this 60-man group of players, this player pool that can
Right.
be chosen from. But if you put one of those guys who's not on the 40-man roster, you put him on the 40-man roster, maybe you let him play in games. You can't just throw him off the 40-man roster when these co when the guys who have COVID-19, get healthy and are ready to come back. You would have to lose that player to waivers, or maybe you lose a player who's coming back instead.
Well, I think that's incorrect.
Okay.
I think with COVID cases, you're allowed to make moves that you wouldn't normally do because otherwise, it's just the season's not going to work, and you can't be penalized for guys getting COVID. They come off the 40 man, when Luis Urias and Angel Perdomo and Eric Lauer started the season on the COVID IL, they were off the 40 man.
Right.
So
That's not the part
but
that it's the
yeah,
players you have.
you're talking about who they replace them with if they got to go back through waivers
Right.
when they go down. And with the COVID guys, you do not. If it's another, like here's an example. You do have to, if it's just a regular replacement. When the Brewers brought Eric Lauer off the COVID IL and put him on their team, they had to clear a 40-man roster spot for him. So they DFA'd Mike Morin, the pitcher on their team. So that had to, the guy coming off had to go, because he did not have COVID himself. He had to go through the normal channels. And so he got DFA'd in the Marlins claiming, because the Marlins are claiming every single person that goes on waivers this week. They've claimed like three or four guys already because they got to fill a team and they got like 13 guys on the COVID IL. So that when they start playing again tonight, I can't wait to see their lineup and their roster. That's like the bad news Bears. They just went out and got anybody that had a pulse and said, "Would you please come play for us?"
And the Marlins are actually why I'm asking this question. And I'm not an expert on the Marlins roster construction, but they did claim Mike Morin and a ton of other guys. And I thought that would make more sense if they didn't want to promote others on their 60 player pool who are younger prospects or guys that they just don't want to lose off the 40-man roster. You go get a bunch of other guys. I don't want to call those guys disposable or anything, but you can easily then, send those guys away when your main players get healthy again. That was kind of my understanding, is that's the Marlins are taking that track so that they don't have to lose any of the players in their 60-man player pool. But you're saying somebody can be added to the 40 and subtracted without penalty, given if they're replacing somebody with COVID.
If it's a COVID situation, but not just a regular, I think if it's just a regular transaction and you outright a guy, he can't go back on the 60-man player pool.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, and I know that you can't just eschew somebody from the 60-man player pool unless they themselves have COVID. You can't just, like Ethan Small can't just be told to go home to make room for another player unless he
Yeah,
himself has COVID.
you've declared your pool. Now, the Brewers just lost two guys from their pool. Shelby Miller opted out, and maybe it was the Mike Morin or whatever. They just added two prospects, a pitcher named Justin Topa and a really highly regarded young outfielder, Hedbert Perez. But they were not sent there because they're going to play for the Brewers this year. They were sent there to have some instruction and coaching like the other prospects are. So if you lose a 60-man guy, you can replace them. But you can't just like start cutting guys off the 60-man because you decided you want somebody else,
It is confusing, understandably. It's a 1 year, at this point, a temporary setup. So I imagine there's still some wrinkles in there that aren't 100% clear.
Here's just the best way to think about it. If it involves a COVID player, the rules are kind
Thrown out the
of
window.
suspended. But if it's not, like Jacob Nottingham yesterday was optioned, to the alternate training site because he has minor league options. He was optioned. But that was just a regular player move because it was a regular transaction. Somebody was coming onto the roster, and so they took him off. Brett Anderson was coming on from just a regular injury list, and so Nottingham was optioned out. So there are regular moves that stay in place if it's not COVID related, but if it's COVID related, there are some exceptions to the rules. Otherwise, this just wouldn't work. I mean, the Marlins got like 13 guys on the COVID IL, and looks like the Cardinals are going to have seven or eight. You've got to have some exceptions to the normal roster rules when you're talking about that many people, you
Right,
know?
for sure. All right, Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, keeping us up to date with what's going on. You'll be at Miller Park again through the rest of this homestand, and we're talking off mic a little bit. Little kind of depressing in there, where you kind of have to just keep to yourself and do your own thing. But I know you and Todd Rosiak were both there, but it's obviously very different, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, everybody that was tired of my yapping is pretty happy with the new rules.
Yeah. Well, there's no Tom Haudricourt running through the press box repeating his favorite jokes to different people. None of that. That has all been banned. And I'm sure it has not is everything to do with COVID, right, Tom?
It's killing me now. I just have to use all my material on Twitter.
And you certainly do. You can find him on Twitter at Haudricourt, HAUDRICOURT. You can find me as well at JR Radcliffe. You can find everything Tom and Todd have to say at jsonline.com. Tom, thanks for joining us. We'll chat again real soon.
Okay, thanks, JR.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.